What up, witches, and welcome to Witching and Bitching, a podcast. I'm your host, Darren.
And I'm Vicky. How are you all today? Hope you're all doing really well. I don't know why I always go so high-pitched when I do that.
It's okay. I've just learned to let it go and just accept whatever comes out of your mouth to be the thing that
that's coming out today.
Yep. Hope you're really, really well. I love it.
So what are we talking about today?
We're going to talk about crystals again. So, in a follow-up from our previous episode, because obviously we've already done an episode on crystals. But like we said in that episode, picking your favorite crystal to talk about is like picking your favorite child. I mean, we all know which one is my precious.
Look, it's not really that hard for you, is it?
No.
We all know
my precious child is always sitting here nice and close by whenever we talk crystals.
I noticed that there's nothing else on display today.
No. Just... Well, I mean, other than what's on me. But
I was going to say yes.
Nothing
yes,
else, but... because my little precious has centre stage.
Here we go. That's Pat.
Yeah. Just stroking my precious. Oh, by the way, I'm talking about my big wad of obsidian. Get your mind out of the gutter, you dirty witches. You dirty, dirty witches.
Well, that was about to go worse then, because you were saying your big wad of... I'm like, where are we going now?
Terrible, Muriel. You're terrible.
Terrible, Muriel.
Yeah. So, in order to kick things off, so we're going to do things a little different this time. Actually, no. Did we do it that last time?
We did the same last time.
We're not doing anything different. It's all the same.
We're
doing everything the same. Same old. But Vicky, which crystal would you like to start off with today?
So today I'm going to start with a smoky quartz because this is one that's around the place quite a bit.
I like a good piece of smoky quartz.
Yes, I do too. So here's a bit of a visual fun fact for you, although it's probably not really what I would call a fun fact.
It's actually quite sad.
It's actually a little bit sad. So this is something that I actually just learnt when I was doing our research. So normally
you research before episodes?
I know it doesn't always seem that way, but I actually do. So normally when you think of a smoky quartz, you think of quite a dark black color, but in actual fact it's almost like a browny sort of color, and you're looking for that translucent sort of shade. So what I'm going to show you now, if you're looking on YouTube, you can see I'm not sure if it's going to come out very well, but it's dark black almost, isn't it? And then there's another piece that's black, and then it's got a little bit of white quartz on the bottom. Now, what I found out is that a lot of the really dark pieces that really look really quite black and have that not so translucent sort of color have actually been artificially irradiated in a lab to be black. So they are a standard quartz that's basically been baked to turn it into a smoky quartz. So I just found out two of my big pieces that I always thought was a big smoky quartz are actually probably artificially irradiated.
Why would they do that? Like what from your research, what have you looked up?
So often what it is that the darker the color, it can actually be more expensive. Mm-hmm. So the darker the you can actually see it, because I've got a couple of pieces here that I do know are legit pieces. So this one that I've got, if you put it up, it almost looks pretty much
like a clear quartz.
But if you can see it really well, you can see that there's just this sort of slight
smokiness
brown,
to it. Yeah,
this like brown sort of tinge to it. And so we've got the same with these other ones. That actually most of the quartz we'll find is actually quite light. Mm-hmm. And it's really quite brown, and that's a little bit more common, whereas the darker pieces, which I do have one here, they can be worth a little bit more. And so that's why it's often irradiated, because quartz is so abundant as well. Just mm-hmm. clear quartz is so abundant, whereas a smoky quartz isn't as abundant. So if you just bake it.
Yeah, because the natural process that nature goes through, it's the radiation that happens as a result of the surrounding minerals and aluminium in the ground.
In it, yeah.
So that's a very rare case.
Just sped up. Yeah, so it's like it's a really sped up process, something that doesn't often happen as much. So one way you can have a look is to see, so a natural one, if you look on YouTube, it actually doesn't come out that well, probably because my hair's black and everything around me is quite dark. You can't see it. But if you look into it, it should kind of look translucent or have natural variations in the depth mm-hmm. of color. And that's what you're looking for. Whereas if I have a look at these other pieces that I've got that is really quite black, if you look through them, it's you can't really see through them and there's not a lot of depth of color. It's just that black color. So that's probably the irradiated part. So there you go. That's a part to have a little bit of a looksy-loo out when you're buying your smoky quartz. Hmm. So what does it do, I guess, is now our next thing. So smoky quartz is a really great grounding crystal. It's one of those really great ones for grounding. It's, I would say it's a little bit more gentle in its kind of approach than some of the other ones. Like it's a bit more of a gentler energy.
Not like my precious.
No, no, that's it. Because it's also, which I'm about to say, is also, it's really great for, it's also a really great clearing crystal as well. So clearing away negative energy, that negative mental energy. And so it's the same thing again. Like I know we spoke about your precious, the obsidian, and I spoke about, I think it was black tourmaline last time, which both have the same kind of similar properties of like clearing and getting rid of negative energy. But the smoky quartz is,
it's
gentle. It's a, there's no other way of really describing it. No. I don't, it's not any less powerful or anything like that. It's just a much gentler, softer. It's just a softer energy. Yeah.
It's like we touched on with the obsidian and tourmaline. It's like, I know obsidian especially, it's like you want the truth, here's the truth. It's like right there in front of you, staring you black and blue in the face as to a reason for the reason why you're all over the place or whatever. Whereas quartz, because quartz is an amplifier, but smoky quartz is a grounder. Like it's kind of like it's going to bring you down gently.
Yeah.
Not just go fuck.
It's like bang, you're down on the ground. You're down now. Yeah, it's that gentler energy. So it's a really beautiful one to use for all of those kind of things. So it transforms negative emotions, negative energy patterns. Also, it's really good for helping to dissolve in your energy fields from like negative thought forms and things that we can create from our own thought forms and creating their own energy and anger and resentment, all of those kind of things. So it's really great for dispersing that. And like we say, in a much more gentler, softer kind of way, as well as it's great for then also putting up a bit of a barrier, protective barrier around you as well once it's done that. It's also a really great one to connect with outside energy. So your higher awareness, other worlds, other realms, all of those sort of things. So it's really great because it brings that discernment and protection to whatever, wherever you're going. So it's helping to find that clarity a little bit in the mind. It's also, on another kind of aspect to it, it's also known sometimes as a stone of cooperation.
Oh.
Well, yes.
I did not know that.
Yeah, so it's actually, this is where it would really be really great for, like, if you're using it in spell work or for spell bags and things like that. It's actually really great for unifying the energies of different things that are going for the same kind of goal. So it's like, it brings things together, brings everything together. So it would be a great stone to use in spell work and things like that, where you're kind of helping to bring all those energies in together for that one kind of course of effect. So so then it's also really great for being a mood elevator as well, which it helps, stress reliever, all of those kind of things, because again we're dealing with that whole mental energy and that negative emotions and things like that.
I was a bit of a sneaky witch, so
a little
while ago I bought myself one of those, you know, those bottles that you can get that has the crystal, like the crystal point in the bottom.
Yeah,
so the one that I got, because I wanted to like sip my water out of it to like give me energy and like make me more focused and whatever, so I got myself a clear quartz one because my husband was going through a particularly stressful time, so I bought him one as well, but I bought him a smoky quartz one.
Ooh.
Because I know that he tends to live a lot in his head and stress a lot, so it's just so it's still energizing but bringing him down at the same time. And he's like, why do I have a smoky quartz in mine? I'm like, no reason,
that was just that's all they had. One each, so I know which one's which.
Yeah, that's what I pretty much said.
That's yours, that's mine.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that. That's kind
of... Well, it's just a subtle way of, like, you know, because, like, I mean, people always say, oh, you talk about your husband a lot on the show. Oh, well, it's because he's part of my life.
Part of your life. That's it.
But, so it's a subtle way of, like, helping him, like, not helping him, but, like, bringing him along on my journey, but in a very subtle way. So if he's drinking out of a drinking bottle... I'm asking him to cast a spell or call the four quarters or any of that stuff. I'm just asking you to drink some water, which you do anyway.
That's it. Having some nice charged water. It's fine. He's nourished. He's rehydrated. It's yeah. Good.
That's a little subtle way to bring into the.
I like that. I might have to remember that one.
Yeah, and you can find they're dime a dozen these days. You can find them.
Yeah,
everywhere.
You can. They're around everywhere. Except I'm always terrified because they're glass. And even though I know glass bottles are so much better, I've had glass bottles. I have a tendency to drop my drink bottles, and I think I would.
So you're a clumsy witch then.
Yeah, I am. Mm. I am. I really am. Okay. And I don't think they would bounce.
Somehow. No, they don't.
No.
not that I've tried, but no.
So see,
before I bought one, I actually used a Voss drinking bottle, like just because the Voss water bottles are made out of glass, to test myself if I could carry that around for a decent amount of time without breaking it.
Oh, that's so good.
Then I kind of, okay, now I think I've deserved to buy a glass bottle with a crystal in it because I didn't want to break that. Like,
That's it. So one goes, it's okay.
Yeah. Because Voss, I'm like, whatever. It's just just water. I mean,
come on.
It's water from the Norwegian fjords.
I had to say, let's really talk about the real reason, because I used to have a Voss bottle as well. And I'm like, I used to do it just to be cool.
Yeah, because I just fill it up with my filtered water.
Me too. I just used to refill it.
Oh God. Anyway, we digressed a little.
I know, we always do. So yeah, so that's smoky quartz. It's great for grounding, clearing, but it's that little bit more of a gentler kind of energy than say your obsidian or tourmaline. And it's also great if you're if you work with like crystal healing or healings and things like that, to put a point of black quartz. Oh my God, now I'm talking about black obsidian. Now I'm getting them all mixed together. Smoky quartz with the point facing away between the feet, and it just helps to ground that energy, as that healing energy, as you're doing it.
I like it.
Yeah. So that's some smoky quartz.
Get some smoky quartz in here.
Get some smoky quartz.
Mm. Awesome.
So what are you going to let us know about?
So I was just seeing which way I was going to go with this, but I think because of how we started off talking about yours and with the whole thing of like some fun facts. So the first one I'm going to be talking about, I'm actually wearing a fair bit of it. So I have this one here around my neck, which is very heavy.
Beautiful. Yeah.
So quick shout out to Puna. So Puna is my soul sister. She lives in New Zealand in a place called Taranaki. And when I went over there to, because I used to travel there for Zumba a lot, and I did a really big class and whatnot. And she, because in Maori culture, this what's called Ponamu. So Ponamu is what they called jade nephrite. It's actually, you have to gift it to someone. You can't buy it yourself, because they think that if you buy it yourself, it's cursed.
Yes.
So it has to be gifted. And what I didn't know is that she'd actually obtained this one. She was wearing it when I was with her that day. She was wearing it around all day. And I just thought it's like hers.
Yeah, yeah.
That in New Zealand, they call it a taonga. So a taonga is a treasure. And it's oftentimes, it's like an heirloom that's passed down from in the family. And it's they're worth so much money. So much money. Especially this one. I don't even want to guess how much she bought. It'd be good.
Something in probably good 10 centimeters?
10 centimeters in length, and it's about 5 centimeters, or maybe 3 centimeters in width, maybe 3 or 4 centimeters in width.
Yeah, it's a big piece.
Yeah, and the length of it, it sits right on my heart chakra. I can actually feel my heartbeat. Because of the weight of it, I can actually feel my heartbeat vibrating off the back of the crystal. It's bizarre.
That would be such a weird feeling
because you can just feel your heartbeat on your chest, it's just cool. Anyway, so for the Maori, they actually use, so this one is actually cut in such a way, it's not sharp, but the angle of it, they actually use jade they use it as cutting instruments, knives and blades and stuff. They would use it to cut their fish or whatever.
Yeah.
So it was actually used as for axes, blades, any form of cutting instrument was made out of jade.
Really?
Because of the properties of it. It's so hard. From what I've read, the only way to actually mine jade is to use a crystal diamond head on a drill bit to cut through it. Because that's how hard it is. And oftentimes when they're extracting jade from natural sources in the mountains and whatnot, the diamond point head needs to be cooled with water continuously while they're drilling, because otherwise it will overheat from the friction of the jade. And a lot of times, because they say that diamond is impenetrable, you can't break through diamond.
Yeah.
So the only way to stop it from breaking on jade is actually to cool it continuously the whole time while they're drilling. Yeah, it's quite a process. So if you ever go to New Zealand.
I had no idea. It was such a, I was going to say a hard rock. Yeah, but I had no idea that that was the process.
Yeah, so like it's very, very common. So to get nephrite jade, otherwise, so Ponamu is usually either nephrite jade, bowenite, or serpentinite. So they're the three types that they call Ponamu. So depending on which region it comes from.
Yeah.
So basically with the different types, obviously there's a lot of different Maori words for them, but basically that's what they used it for. So it's a taonga, which is a treasure that you keep or keep
that's
like
beautiful.
Keep on your person.
Yeah.
So this particular shape of this one is, I think they call it a toki. So a toki is basically, it's to symbolize strength and courage and being a warrior. And so when Puna gifted it to me, it was with that intention that I could wear it and know that everything that I need to get through life, all that courage and boldness, and whatever, comes from within. And it's just there to remind me that I am the internal warrior that I'm projecting to the world.
That's so beautiful.
But yeah,
and it sits at your heart space too. Like it's just like, that is so perfect.
Oh, and like side note. So what she actually did was when she was wearing around all day to put her energy into it, because we spent the day together just sightseeing and whatever. And I even commented, she was sitting opposite me and I saw it was sitting right cleavage area. She was sitting there. And I was like, oh, that's such a beautiful piece. She goes, do you like it? I said, oh my God, it's just something about it just draws me in. And she's like having this cheeky little smile, looks at her sister, and they both smiled at each other because they were in on the fact that it was mine.
Yeah.
But she was just putting her energy into it because she's very spiritual, and she's in the iwi, which is like the Maori council. So she was doing a lot of meditative, contemplative prayer and whatnot during the day, putting her energy into it for me. And then when we did this masterclass, raising this energy for Zumba, and then she actually, while her sister was talking to me, presenting me with like whatever they were gifting me, like I was just listening to her and she was making me cry. What I didn't see is that Puna was passing it around the crowd and every single person in that crowd kissed it. They were blessing it.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, so I've gone on a bit of a tangent explaining this one, but it's just,
I'm just trying to show
you that that's how sacred it is to the Maori.
Yeah, that's right.
That you don't just go out and buy it.
No.
It has to be gifted. And there's actually quite a process to be gifted one. It's like a very honorable thing. So I wear this one with so much pride.
Yes.
Like it's not one that I wear
down the street.
Mm. Yeah, it's only special occasions where I put it on. But anyway, other forms of jade. I'll bring it back to topic.
Yeah,
so I've also got on my wrist, for those watching on YouTube, you can see the one closest to camera, which is like the furthest down my wrist. This one is actually from China, because most people associate jade with Chinese history and stuff. Because they
And that's quite a pale one too, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a paler color. Yeah. And then the other one I've got just above it is actually some jade from British Columbia. Because jade was actually also used by the Native American Indigenous First Nations people that go up and down the west coast of the US and Canada. So jade was actually common for them to use as well. So fun fact on that is that jade was only discovered in Canada when the Chinese immigrants came across for the gold rush. Because in British Columbia and up and down the west coast, like during the gold rush era of like California and whatnot, they, when they saw jade, they dismissed it because they weren't looking for it. They're looking for gold, like as in they're non-Indigenous.
Yeah.
But when the Chinese people, I don't know if you know your history with the gold rush, but when the Chinese immigrants came to work the gold fields as well, they saw it and they're like, oh, that's jade. And then all of a sudden it started to get mined for its preciousness by the locals and by the other people that were mining in the area at the time. So it was actually blind eye turned to it for so long. It's only
because nobody knew what it was.
Yeah,
basically.
Because the Chinese knew what jade
already
is.
Had. Yeah, that's right. They already had it within their field of reference.
But on that note, so there's two types of jade that, well, what we call jade.
Yeah.
So there's nephrite and then there's jadeite. So jadeite is more common in East Asia. So in China and Japan and Korea and whatnot, they use jadeite. Now, jadeite is like the easiest way to discern that one is that it's usually translucent. So you can see through it.
If you
held this one here, it's a little bit milky in color, but this one you can actually see the light through it because it's translucent. Whereas when you go nephrite is usually, you can't see through nephrite. It's like solid. So this
color, that's
it solid. Doesn't matter if you try, like I can only see through on the edge
happening.
And that's because it's thin. But I also have some other tumble stones of jade and nephrite, which I'm holding up for camera, which you can see they've got a little bit of like speckled colors and whatnot.
Yeah, it kind of looks a little bit like serpentine or serpentine, I think.
Yeah.
Because of the yellow bits.
Exactly. So scientifically speaking, nephrite is a silicate of calcium and magnesium, and it's in the amphibole group of minerals, whereas jadar is a silicate of sodium and aluminium, and that's in the pyroxene group of minerals. So they're completely different classifications.
How funny
of mineral
is that?
When it comes from a like chemistry perspective.
Yeah.
But we put them together because of the fact that, well, they look similar. They've got similar properties and whatnot. So when you say jade, so linking it back to what you were saying, oh God, that was a long way of getting there. The ways to tell real jade.
Oh, yes.
So, because I actually went to China, and in Shanghai, we went to a jade, I don't know, for lack of a better word, like a factory where they make
where they
things out of it, you know, polish it and carve it and all that stuff. So jade is always cold to the touch.
Oh, I didn't
know
that.
Because as a mineral, it doesn't absorb any heat. Like, obviously, if you're just there rubbing it in your hands, it will get warm. But like, for example, if I touch this on the outside, this is not hot at all. It's cold. Same with my bracelets. They are cold to touch. And I've been wearing them all day. Like, they actually stay cold. Even on a hot day, I've had my bracelet in the car, and when I grab it, it's cold.
Oh, so that's the, hey, that's a little bit of a thing. If it's hot, go get some jade. Well, help cool you down.
In actual fact, that's why they use it more modern day. They use it on those rollers and stuff, the face rollers, because it's cool.
Because the difference of temperature.
Yeah. So that way, when you're rolling whatever creams and stuff on your face, or just give yourself a facial
with
the roller.
Bringing all the pores and everything, closing them all down.
Yeah, exactly. So so that's one way of telling with jade, that because a lot of times, obviously being... you can buy a lot of jade from Asia, especially in China. Yeah. And that's the way that you would tell if you're walking around those little bazaars and markets and stuff.
Yeah.
If you pick it up and it feels warm, or it doesn't feel cool to touch.
Yeah.
It's probably either plastic, or it's got some jade with a plastic backing, or it could be colored glass.
Yeah.
As glass will absorb heat, jade won't, to a degree anyway. So that's a couple of little fun facts for you.
Yeah, that's a great way, because there is, and that's a sad thing with crystals and things like that. There is a lot of like mass produced stuff now. And it's plastic or glass.
Or glass, that's another common one. That's man-made.
That's man-made. So, which is fine if people are letting you know that that's what it is, that that's what you're buying.
Yeah, it's just so hard when you go to like, that's why I always say, go to a reputable crystal dealer. If you are buying crystals, go somewhere reputable, or, you know, in the end of the day, we're witches, it's all about intent. So can you get the same intention out of a crystal that's been man-made versus one that's natural? Probably. Because you're setting the intention for that crystal, if that's what you're doing.
Yeah.
Obviously, if it's a real crystal, it's going to have the natural properties, which you're going to amplify anyway. Yeah. But in the end of the day, any spell work you do, if the intention is there to bring in that energy, then
you can do it.
You could probably do it still.
Yeah.
So with jade, now we've moved on from the jadeite and nephrite thing. Cool. So it's a similar purity and serenity. It's been prized in the East because it signifies wisdom gathered in tranquility, and it's associated with the heart chakra, increasing love and nurturing. So obviously anything that's colored green is usually good for the heart chakra. It's a protective stone which keeps the wearer from harm and brings harmony, and it's believed to attract good luck and friendship. This is why, especially in Asian culture, it's all about that luck generation. So that's why the emperor, if you look up Chinese, mythology, they call them the Jade Emperor.
Yes.
Because
it's all
that prosperity and luck.
Prosperity and luck. Because also, do they have like the jade dragons and things like that? They'd have the statues carved in those.
Yeah, well, statues in everything. Like this museum we went to, if only I could show you guys photos on this. Like we saw massive like dragons that are like the size of this room that I'm in, carved out of jade.
And like now to also know how hard it is to mine and things like that, like to think how much effort and everything that's
to carve something out of jade.
To carve it out of jade, that's amazing.
Which is why sadly it's that push towards mass produced like resin and polymers and stuff, because unfortunately as science expands, there's that temptation of let's just produce it in a different way.
Let's just make it.
And sometimes you can tell, because if you've got a jewelry piece, you might see like a little thing at the bottom where it's been like they've poured it into a mold and they've like snapped it off or whatever, and it's got that little tag thing sticking out,
the lip kind of
Edge bit that's still where it was snapped off from the mold or whatnot. So look, there's lots of little ways that you can look into that. Yeah. But anyway, so psychologically, jade stabilizes the personality and integrates the mind with the body.
Oh.
It promotes self-sufficiency, and mentally it releases negative thoughts and soothes the mind. So it can stimulate ideas and makes tasks seem less complex so they can be acted upon immediately. So this is a very soothing, calming energy. It's got that very soft tone. The same as smoky quartz has that very soft
tone. Yeah, that soft tone kind of energy. Yeah.
Spiritually, it can encourage you to become who you really are, and it assists in recognizing yourself as a spiritual being on a human journey and awakens knowledge.
Ooh.
And then physically, it's a cleansing stone, so aiding the body's filtration and elimination organs. So it's basically the stone that was associated with the kidneys. Sometimes people call it kidney stone, because they say that it actually has a healing properties, that you can actually heal kidney stone issues with jade. So even when we look at, etymologically speaking, the actual name itself, let me just get rid of a couple of these things. So I've done a lot of research for this one. Oh,
because I mean, even just the names, I didn't realize, because I haven't worked with jade a lot myself, but I also didn't realize that nephrite, jadeite, that they were all jade, that it was talking about the same.
Yeah. Nephrite, jadeite are synonyms for jade, what we call jade.
Yeah.
So the English word of jade is derived from the French word of le jade, and the Latin ilia, which means flank or kidney area.
Oh, wow.
And then the Spanish term, which is piedra de ijada, which was first recorded back in 1565, translates as loin stone. And it's also got, because of the reputation that it was good for curing ailments of the loins and kidneys. And nephrite is derived from the word lapis nephriticus, a Latin translation of the Spanish piedra de ijada. So it's like all of these languages have derived the same word from that same kidney loin area. They say that it's supposed to be able to heal that area. Now, obviously with jade, like I'm talking a lot about green jade, but there are many different types. I'm not going to cover all of them in this video because we're going to be here forever. In this podcast, whichever you're doing. Because you can get it in blue-green, brown, green, lavender, orange, red, white, yellow. But on that note...
Wow, I didn't like realize even, that's lavender.
Yeah, oh, lavender jade. So that one's actually good for alleviating emotional hurt and trauma. And it bestows inner peace and it teaches subtlety and restraint in emotional matters and sets clear boundaries.
And that's probably why I picked that one out.
But even when you think of the ones that are energizing, so if you think of your chakra points, because if you think there's a color for every chakra, basically, yellow and orange chakra points are normally more active chakras. But when you have jade, it's a very subtle, so it's energizing in a very subtle, soft way. So it's kind of giving you that slight nudge rather than pushing you off the cliff.
Which is something I think sometimes we skip over a little bit with those kind of things. We're always kind of looking for the quicker heart go for it kind of way, whereas that subtle, slow energy, softer energy can be just as beautiful.
Yes. But basically with wearing them, obviously you can wear them in many different ways. I wear this one here because it's right on my heart chakra. But I also wear my bracelets because that's close to my meridian points, if you believe in Chinese medicine, and the meridian points on the wrists.
Pulse points.
The pulse points, exactly. But you can wear them wherever appropriate. So you can place, especially if you've got the different colored jades, you can place them on the different points in the chakras, on the body.
Yeah, wouldn't that be beautiful to have all the set, like to do like a chakra healing kind of thing with just jade, like one particular, that would have such a beautiful synchronicity.
Yeah, it would just be really, I mean, I don't know how expensive they would be to get all the colors of jade.
To do them all. Yeah, probably wouldn't be. But it would be amazing to try that.
But yeah, so that's my little spiel on jade.
Oh, I love it.
So as you know, like if you have a chance, either going to China where there's lots of jade, or going to British Columbia in Canada, or even going to New Zealand, which... You know, in our travel bubble, I think we can go to New Zealand, I'm pretty sure, at the moment.
Yeah, I think we can, actually.
So especially if you go down to the South Island, that's where they source it mainly. So it's, I think they're, oh God, now I've forgotten the word for it, but there's actually, the name for the South Island is actually in Maori, they call it Te Wai Ponamu, which means the greenstone waters. That's the name for South Island.
Wow.
Yeah, Te Wai Ponamu.
And isn't it amazing that it's like all those different sort of
ancient
cultures have that same reverence for
the jade. I think if you look at it, like using it as a tool because of how hard it is was one thing. Because I mean, this, we're talking pre-Bronze Age kind of cultures. Like Bronze Age, when we found we could melt metals and do all that stuff and whatever, that's great. But before that, they had to use something else. They needed something that was hard. It wasn't just going to snap. So if you think of like the Native Americans, they would use a lot of obsidian for their spearheads. But then they use jade for cutting instruments as well. Then same with the Maori. And then I'm not so much sure about China, but I have seen in my research that a lot of South Asian culture, like in Sri Lanka and in the Indus Valley region, they used a lot of jade like for cutting instruments as well. So it's like all these ancient cultures.
Have used it for that. That sort of property, but then they've also then flipped that for the more like spiritual treasured kind of properties as well, which is beautiful.
That's why you find a lot of crowns and adornments of that jade. Anyways,
I love that.
Your turn. What are we talking about next?
So next one I picked was something that I don't know if it's just me, but I've seen a lot. It seems to be a lot more popular at the moment. So I'm
You're going to talk selenite, aren't you?
Yes.
As soon as you said something that's become more popular, I'm like, it's fucking everywhere.
Isn't it? Like, is it, I mean, it's not just me, is it? It wasn't always as, I don't know, at the forefront as what it was.
No. By the way, hi, Karen. Sorry, I swore. anytime I swear, I have this thing where I'm like, I have to say, hi, Karen.
Hi,
don't mind me. Anyways, selenite is, it's actually become very popular.
I don't know, it's just out there everywhere now. It's one that you kind of just see all over the place, and I don't think I used to see it as much before. I don't know,
I don't remember seeing it often.
I
would see is a tumble stone, whereas now I'm seeing it in more of its raw forms.
I was gonna say there's a lot more raw forms now, so you'll see it in both kind of ways. So you'll see the tumble, there's like, you can get lamps, you can get bowls. I've seen beautiful bowls carved out of it. Also, I have a little prop here that is a beautiful, a beautifully carved selenite knife.
A dagger.
Amazing, a dagger, whatever you'd like to call it. It's not something I've ever, honestly, I'm standing here as I'm like waving this around. It's quite interesting because I'd never really been super attracted to them before, but I saw this one and I just had to come home with me, so.
This Queen of Swords over here was never attracted to selenite until they turned it into a bloody dagger.
That's it, once you turn it into a dagger, then I'm in now, I'm back in. So yeah, so you often find it in this kind of form, in that tumbled form. You see like little spiral towers and things like that as well, but there's a lot of raw selenite. So selenite, so in its raw form, it also really glows really well in the light as well, so it looks really trippy.
Yeah, especially like in like candle holders, they look really cool.
Yeah, they look amazing. And you can do like the, instead of a salt lamp, there's a selenite lamp.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you can really see it. My camera's not awesome.
Oh no, we can see the little flecks and the little bits of powdery bits and whatnot.
Yeah, so
very fibrous.
Yeah, so in its raw form, it's actually really fragile and quite brittle. There's like all these tiny little fibers that go down. And yeah, they come off quite easy. Like
I always get white hands when I touch selenite.
It's almost like little, it reminds me of like a white, transparent kind of angel hair pasta, all kind of like squished together. There are all these little strands that you can get off of it. And you'll often find those and like wands and things like that with it now as well. So that's where you'll see it. So it's white, it's sort of that translucent sort of color. It's actually a form, it's a crystallized form of gypsum.
Oh. Yeah. That I did not know.
Yeah, so that's what it is. That's what it is. So it's often people will talk about it a lot, that it's like a self-cleansing stone. You don't need to cleanse it or clean it or charge it or anything like that, which I think there's a lot of like those bowls and things like that are made for those, so you can put crystals in them, stuff like that. But it's a really peaceful kind of crystal. It's great to have in your house, like have a large piece somewhere in your house, and to help promote that peaceful atmosphere and to give that deep sense of peace. Now, the reason I think you find now there's a lot of wands and knives or daggers carved into it, that it's often really associated as well as cleansing the aura and detaching negative entities or things like that, like clearing through the aura, cord cutting, all of those kind of things. So it's really good for using all of that sort of stuff again. And again, it's that kind of, it's a cleansing in a softer kind of energy. So it's not that forceful sort of energy that we have with some of the other ones. It's a really kind of fine vibration, that really high vibration. So it's often associated also with the moon and water, and being selenite, it was also said that it was named after the goddess Selene. Yeah. I don't know. I have to completely fact check. I have read that in, that was in one of the books. I don't know if that's necessarily exactly where it came from, but that's where it is. So it helps to promote, again, it helps to promote clarity in your mind. It instills that deep sense of peace. It's also really great for stabilizing erratic emotions. So if you're feeling really erratic, it's great in a, I guess, not necessarily grounding, but just to help clear everything and bring everything down. It helps to assist us with judgment and create kind of that big picture thinking with everything. So with judgment and things, it's quite narrow, where we're trying to open it up a little bit higher. It also helps with integrating the unconscious into the conscious mind as well. So again, got all those kind of things. And then there's a lot of association with communication with the higher realms, higher guidance, celestial realms, all of those kind of things as well. Helps to bring in peace with meditation and all your spiritual work. So it's that, it's got that really peaceful energy to it. It's also said to be really good to use to help you access if you are doing sort of past life work or future life work or any of that kind of thing. It's one of those ones that helps to access those areas as well. What else was I going to say about it? It also helps with aligning through the spine. It's one for to help for spinal alignment.
Oh.
Yeah, with back and spinal alignment. So using selenite for that.
Interesting.
Yes.
Yeah, I've never really, even just reflecting, like I've never really been drawn to selenite, but more as I said, more recently I've started looking at it more often. So, like I've even been on a call with you, I think, the last time we talked about it. I'm like, do I want to buy one of these?
Yeah. See, it's like, do I want that or not? I've been a bit the same. I've only really started using it a lot more, not so much a lot, but I've only started using it now. And I do use it in combination with a really great combination is piece of selenite and a piece of black tourmaline in your house.
I could see how that would work.
Yeah,
well.
They work really well together.
Interestingly, they both have that similar, because tourmaline is quite like
stringy. It's that striated kind of, they're very similar in how, I've got one here somewhere. No, it's disappeared. That's okay. It fell off. It ran away. Oh no, not my tourmaline,
like,
it ran away.
Get away from me. No,
it's like,
kidding.
No. So yeah, it's a really, again, it's that softer kind of energy and brings in that peace and calm and clearing, but in that gentler, peaceful kind of way.
Awesome.
Isn't it a little bit interesting that all of the ones that I seem to have picked are all like clarity of mind, cleansing, clearing?
What does that say about you?
I know, that's what I'm thinking. I'm like, oh yeah, they're all the same, but that's okay.
Well, now I'm reflecting on the ones that I've chosen.
I know.
A bit of a breadth of different ones.
A little bit.
Bit of this, bit of that. So my next one that I have, now I don't actually have my piece here because I don't know where it is. I've put it somewhere safe and I couldn't seem to find
it
before we started recording. I'm sorry. but you guys will know this one, guys and girls, sorry, will know this one. Lapis lazuli.
Yeah.
Love a bit of lapis.
I do too.
So lapis lazuli has actually been around since the 7th millennia BCE.
Oh.
In other words, 7,000 years before the Common Era. And when we say BCE, I'm meaning as in like, because we tend to find things before Christ. But I'm saying BCE before the Common Era, what we socially
refer
accept
as
being
common.
The Common Era. Yep. So they've actually found it. So it was started off being mined in Badakhshan, which is a province in northeast of Afghanistan. What is now Afghanistan, back then it would have been like Mesopotamia, those types of civilizations. Mm-hmm. So right through the Indus Valley as well. And then it was used also in the funeral masks of Tutankhamun.
Ah, I was going to say, I thought there was an Egyptian,
So it's very, very common in Egypt. Well, not when I say common, not for the commoner. But
not that it was around,
So in actual fact, when it started to become getting exported to Europe, it was ground into powder and made into a type of ochre paint called ultramarine. So for anyone that's watched Vikings or has done any research in medieval Europe, during the Renaissance, when they used to paint with blue, they use it very sparingly because of the fact that it came from lapis lazuli, which was very expensive and hard to find. So it was a very rare stone. So because the only lapis that people knew of was the ones that were on like jeweled adornments on like crowns and things like that. So that's why blue is used so sparsely during the Renaissance, because that really deep ultramarine blue was ground lapis.
Sort of reserved for pictures of royalty
or Christ, like, or depending on what they were depicting at the time, because it was the Middle Ages and the Renaissance period as well. So oftentimes it was reserved for the clothing of the central figures of their paintings, especially the Virgin Mary. It was found, ultramarine has been found in dental tartar of medieval nuns and scribes.
Really?
Random fun fact for you. Yep. Yep.
Wow.
So, moving on to how it was named. So, lapis is the Latin word for stone, and lazuli is the genitive form of the medieval Latin lazulum, which is taken from the Arabic lazaward, which itself comes from the Persian lajevard, which is the name of the stone in Persian. So that's how from Persia, which is where modern day, like ancient Babylonia and ancient Mesopotamia, all those countries were around modern day Persia or Iran. And so because it was taken from the Persian language, changed to Arabic and then changed to Latin. And then now we call it lapis lazuli, which basically means the stone of lazulum. And that's also where you get the Spanish and Portuguese name for the color blue, which is azul. Because as they say blue in Portuguese and Spanish. So you can see how when people say, oh, how do you learn stuff, da da da, just pay attention. Words that we use today, find the root word and you'll find where that word came from.
Where it came from.
Especially when it comes to like the Indo-European languages, they've all come from a similar base root word structure. And then you find when words have been borrowed from, so you see this like modern day Spanish Portuguese kind of has come from Latin, which has come from Arabic, which has come from Persian. You can see this connection between them all.
You see the connection of where people, where they may have been and things like that to bring it over.
Yeah, exactly. So with lapis, as it's more commonly termed, saying lapis lazuli is always a bit of a mouthful. So it opens the third eye and it balances the throat chakra. So it stimulates enlightenment and enhances dream work and psychic abilities, facilitating spiritual journey and stimulating personal and spiritual power. It's it quickly releases stress, bringing deep peace, and it possesses enormous serenity and is the key to spiritual attainment. So it's a protective stone that contacts spirit guardians, and it recognizes psychic attack, blocks it, and returns the energy to its source. So if you think of ancient Egypt, so when you think of all these properties, because obviously we're talking in ancient Egypt, it was that polytheistic kind of society where they believed in a lot of spiritual beliefs, like that whole concept of like, if you're wearing lapis, it's just going to send all that negative shit back to whoever sent it to you. So as a witch, to me, this is like a pretty good staple.
This is, I was going to say,
this is a law of return without doing the law of return.
Yeah, without having to worry about it.
Wear some lapis and then it just sends it right back to where it came from.
And isn't that interesting that that's where it was found, like in crowns and with royalty and things like that, that they're using it for that protection, spiritual sort of side of things.
And it's funny because then when you think of it, like if Christian painters used to use it to paint sacred images of Christ and Mary and all those other people, if you think of what it does spiritually, it's like, are they so different?
How are they? There's a lot of similarities.
So it teaches the power of the spoken word and can reverse curses or disease caused by not speaking out in the past.
That's a good one.
It harmonizes physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual levels. Imbalances between these levels can result in depression or disease and a lack of purpose. So by aligning them, it just helps with that. And in balance, the harmony brings deep inner self-knowledge. So lapis is basically, for me, it's like it amplifies thoughts. It also helps you connect with the psychic senses, that third eye throat, kind of making sure that you're seeing your future and speaking your truth and all that kind of stuff. Like it's for me, it's like one of the best
Yeah, I love those.
For any kind of third eye and throat.
Yeah.
Like that connection kind of between the two. Yeah. It alleviates pain, especially that of migraine headaches. It overcomes depression, benefits the respiratory and nervous system and the throat, larynx, and thyroid, cleanses organs and bone marrow, thymus, and the immune system, and it overcomes hearing loss, purifies blood, and boosts the immune system. Finally, it alleviates insomnia and vertigo and lowers blood pressure. So, oh. I mean, if you want a maximum bang for your buck, stone.
I was about to say.
Like, you've got all of it and a bag of chips. Like, yeah, you know what I mean?
All in one stone.
So they say that it should be placed anywhere above the diaphragm. So the diaphragm sits here. So basically it's sticking to that upper realm of the chakra points.
Yeah.
Anywhere between the sternum and the top of the head is in, basically. But yeah, so that's...
And necklaces, jewelry, headwear. It's all...
Yes.
Perfect.
So the main places that you'll find it is like Afghanistan, so olden day Mesopotamia and whatnot, right through Egypt, through the Maghreb region of the Arab-speaking world, also around the Andes. So lapis was in the Incan, Mayan, those types of cultures. They used a lot of lapis lazuli in their headgear as well. So in the Incas and like that region of Central and South America, it was very common. So it's basically that, if you think of it wrapping a band around the earth, it's that middle section.
That midline.
And the interesting one about lapis lazuli is that it's not actually a crystal.
Oh!
Even though we call it a crystal, it's actually metamorphic rock. So it's a mixture of minerals with lazurite as the main constituent. So it's not actually crystal in its, like, if you talk
any
about it
kind
from
of
a
form.
Chemistry perspective, it's not a form of crystal. It's actually a form of rock. Which is why you can ground it down and turn it into a powder and then turn that into paint.
That's why.
You can't do that with crystal.
Yeah, that's it. That's
it's a different property.
That strength. Yeah, that strength, the different properties with it.
Yeah, but lapis is gorgeous. I love
it. Yeah,
it
is.
I,
it's that really
I wish
dark.
I had some.
I know, and it's usually that kind of dark, often it's that more dark, really vibrant blue.
Yes, it's a really,
color, isn't it?
It's actually, so it usually has, it's blue or purple, mottled with white calcite and brassy pyrite. That's where you get, when you get the white and the yellow in there.
Yeah.
That's actually two other minerals that kind of naturally form as part of the lapis thing. So it's usually quite deep blue
gold,
with the yellow and white in there.
Almost like a gold kind of sheen to it a little bit.
That's why, that's the easiest way to tell it apart from sodalite.
Yes.
Because of the fact that it has the more yellowy
it's
tinges
to it.
It's
the gold part to it. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
So that's my lapis lazuli little spiel.
So going straight over from that one, my next one is
like my segue. I just set you up.
I did. It was so good. It was so good.
It's almost like I planned it.
I know, right? I love it. Yes. So my next one is sodalite. So again, like the lapis, it is a dark, it's a mottled blue with dark blues, but it does have the white in it. And so unlike the lapis, it doesn't have the gold tinge to it.
The pyrite.
Yeah, so this piece I've got here is a raw piece and it's got a little bit of the white in there. You can see that it almost looks like little black dots and things like that.
Dots,
it can be that it can be so dark that it has the black. So you can get some pieces that are quite light, some pieces that are quite dark, and then they have the white in it. And then I've got another piece here. This is one that I use and I just realized before I put it up here that it's actually it's got beeswax on it from one of my candles when I've been using it. But this one I wanted to show because it is so white. There is so much white basically the whole way around it. Mm-hmm. So it's that beautiful dark blue. So that one, again, it's great for the throat chakra and all of that sort of energy. So I think it's like the stone of the mind and the stone of truth. Mm-hmm. That's basically kind of, when you boil it all down, that's what it is. So for the mind part of it, it's about bringing together logic with intuition or logic in the emotions and things like that. So not being caught up in that complete emotional state or completely in your intuition. It's that beautiful marriage between the two where you've got the logic and the intuition. So in that way, it opens up our perception, creates that clarity, removing, so it's without sounding, I don't want to stereotype people or anything like that, but you know, if you have some people that are a bit overly emotional, they can be a little bit overly emotional.
This guy right here.
Overly emotional. It's a really great stone for bringing, again, bringing that clarity and bringing that logic to the emotion and the truth of what the emotion is as well. So just kind of calm all of that down. I like to say it's kind of like bringing the swords energy. If you're into tarot, it's bringing that swords energy into the emotions, bringing that logic part. So it calms down the mind. It also really great for stimulating the release of really rigid mental beliefs or mindsets or all of those kind of things. So about loosening all of that up a little bit.
I'm saving a little story based on all the things you're talking
yes,
about.
Yes, so, yeah, I can't wait. And then so it's also great for deepening your meditation and things like that as well, because it stimulates the pineal gland, or if that's the correct way of saying it. Some people say pineal gland, pineal, I don't know.
Pineal gland. It's either pineal or pineal.
Like, yeah. Yep. So that place in there. So it helps to stimulate that as well. So then on the truth side of things as well, it's really great for self-inquiry, truthfulness, like I mentioned before, truthfulness to your emotions. So really seeing where those emotions are coming from or what they're doing, opening up to your true self and speaking your truth as well. Mm-hmm. Speaking your truth, self-belief, self-acceptance, self-trust. So trusting in yourself as well, increasing self-esteem. So it's really, yeah, I love this stone. It's one of the great ones. And this is something I didn't actually realize, but it does make sense with all the rest of what I've said, is that it's actually really great for using in shadow work.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily the first thing I would always think of with shadow work.
No, I would have thought like a darker stone.
Yeah,
but it does have those elements of black in it, so it makes sense.
Yes, it does have those in there.
I guess if you deconstruct it a little, because your shadow is basically all the suppressed and repressed parts of yourself. And if you're owning up to your truth,
you're bringing that logic to it.
Yeah. I can see that.
Yeah, so I can definitely see where it is. So it works to help bring those shadow qualities to the surface, to be accepted without judgment. So because we're bringing, I guess, we're expanding the mind, we're bringing that logic to the intuition and all of those sort of things, it creates a space that's good for accepting those kind of qualities and integrating those qualities. So I would love to hear what your story is with sodalite, because I adore sodalite.
So I'm holding up a little pendant, or a little, so it's a necklace, like pendant that I had, a little point to the camera for those that want to see. But if you have a look carefully, now I'm going to stop holding it in such a way, it's actually in two pieces.
Snapped in two.
So it snapped in two. And now, so the story that I wanted to tell, because of all the things you just spoke about, I unpacked it and I already discovered all of this, but I thought, what a perfect time to talk about it. So that was actually gifted to me by my teacher of mediumship when I sat in Psychic Development Circle for years.
Yeah.
Back when I was, oh God. I would have been like in my late teens, just before I reached like 20, I think, somewhere in that age group, like late teens, early 20s.
Early 20s.
And she gifted that to me for Christmas, and I wore my sodalite, and I used to wear it all the time. The things that it did do, I learned to speak my truth. I learned to stick up for myself. I learned not to be a pushover. I learned to, like, it was basically all that truth telling and stuff.
Truth. Yeah.
Like I used to like suppress and repress everything. At that phase of my life when I was wearing it, and I didn't even know the full extremities of how strong this crystal was. Every time I'd wear it, I'd like get myself into so many arguments with people because I just like blurted out. So
boom.
So sometimes I would take it off.
Yes. It's like you've got to calm that down a little bit. I've got to
because it would literally, I'd be speaking my truth and calling people out on their BS.
Yeah.
And me having so much Scorpio in my chart. It was like the ultimate truth seeker. Ding. Like I would literally just like sting, call everyone out on their BS. Like I wouldn't, like it used to piss me off if someone was telling half truths.
Yeah.
And anyway, so I wore my sodalite for years. And then the last time that I wore it was actually when I went and did training up in Sydney. I was doing my life coaching training and NLP training and timeline therapy training.
Yeah.
And I wore it there. And there was a particular day that I wore it. I had just done a full day, what do we call it, a breakthrough session, which is where, basically where my partner had to take me through the process after 10 days of intense training, where they went into my deep subconscious and got me to elicit all of the shit that I've been holding on to for all my life, including past lives, including intergenerational trauma, everything. You elicit it through hypnosis, and then they basically help you deal with it. So this is something I was trained in, and so I was confronting parts of myself that I didn't even knew were there.
Yeah.
And then literally after I had finished, towards the end of the day, we're all celebrating the yay breakthrough day. Woo-hoo, yeah. We finished and then it just snapped. I kid you
not. Wow.
Literally, I was just jumping around, and it's not like, I mean, it was just. Like if this was like bouncing on my chest,
it's like, not like I'm armor or something.
I'm not fucking Superman. I don't have a body of steel. But yeah, it was literally just, it was bouncing around on my necklace and it just went snap. And I literally, and I even remember the point, cause it could have easily just not noticed it. But I remember as it happened, I felt this shift. And then I looked down and I saw I only had half of it there and the other half was on the ground. So I picked it up, took it off my necklace, put it in my bag, and I've held on to it.
Yeah.
Not, I'm never going to wear it again. Because it served its purpose.
Correct.
But I've kept it because it's for me, it now serves as a reminder of now that I've found my truth and that I've dealt with my shadow, it serves as a reminder that it's done.
Yeah.
I don't need to revisit any of that past shit again.
Yeah.
Like I've dealt with it.
That energy's gone. Yeah.
But on that note, so let's touch on it briefly before I go to my last one. So that whole thing about losing crystals and breaking crystals and all that kind of stuff, what's your take on it? Let's hash this out a little bit, shall we?
I kind of think in a way that they have either taken a hit for us or like in your case where that energy is shifted and something shifted, something's moved, something's happened to that you don't need, not so much that you don't need it, that you don't need that vibration anymore.
Yeah.
It's gone. It's done its little thing. So I think that in a way that they've kind of taken the hit for us.
And do you know the funny thing is this is just unprovoked. Ever since that happened, I've actually, because I used to have I used to use Sodalite all the time.
Yeah.
After that happened, I actually don't even find it appealing anymore. Like there's no drawing to it.
Yes.
So like I hold this in my hand now and I'm like, whatevs. Yep. Whereas I used to wear it before and it gave me the same sensation.
Feeling
that
of
this would.
Yeah. That's what I think it is. You kind of, you've moved beyond that vibration or what that stone was helping you to do or was helping to bring out. So you don't need that anymore. So like you said, you're not even attracted to that energy anymore.
And
how
so
about
then
you?
No, I actually agree with you. I think the same thing, that they've either taken a hit for us or that we, like it's served its purpose basically. Yep. So when it happened, I just packed it up, put it in my bag. I took it off my necklace. So I wasn't walking around with a half crystal, but I put it in my bag. And then later that night, what I did do is I sat in meditation and held the crystals in my hands in prayer position. And I actually thanked the crystal for all of the learnings that I've achieved over the last 15 or so years and for giving me that guidance and giving that, like, even though like, how am I to know what the crystal did and didn't do? But I thanked it anyway, because I believe that it's an omen and that it served its purpose. And so I wanted to give gratitude to the crystal for helping me get there. Yeah. So that's why I've kept it, because I don't want to get rid of it.
No.
Sentimental value.
Because that was going to be my next question, is what do you feel like to do with them afterwards? Mm. And I agree. I think you need to kind of, I think it was when we were talking to Tommy, he also touched on this, that like you should treat them like an old friend or somebody who has just done something for you. And I agree with that, like you said, like thank it, or now it has a different sort of reverence, I guess, that you have with now.
Interestingly. Interestingly, when I sit this on my hand, I actually don't feel the spirit of the crystal in it anymore.
Yeah.
It like, I honestly believe that it's departed.
Yep.
Like it's left, and this is nothing more than rock.
What's left over.
What's left over, the mineral that it is. It's just a physical mineral. It's not like it doesn't have that kind of spirit energy from what I feel anyway. I don't feel it there anymore. It's nothing more than a symbol of what it was.
Yeah.
But then equally, like when you lose a crystal, my take on that is, because I've lost a couple of crystals over the years, and I believe that when you lose it, it's that someone else who finds it probably needed it more than me.
Yeah.
So again, when that happened, at first, like you go through that frantic, because one of them, I bought it, and then later the next day, I lost it. And I'm like, how could I have lost it so quickly? And then I came to terms with the fact that I was merely the conduit, that I was supposed to take the crystal from Venice Beach, California, across to Orlando and lose it so that the next person to find it, I was merely the conduit that got them the crystal that they needed.
You're the messenger.
More than me.
Yeah, you're the courier, basically. Yeah.
Because, I mean, initially I went through the whole, oh my God, I spent so much money and it's gone. Yeah, and then I'm like, I'm just the messenger that was supposed to go to someone else.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about it that way as well. I'd always just sort of kind of thought it in a way that like it's not something I need anymore. There's a reason it's gone. I don't need that energy in my I don't need its energy or anything like that. But I love that of that somebody else made it, because I have that with hematite.
Mm-hmm.
Cannot wear hematite. I lose it.
Really?
Yep. I've tried so many times over the years. I had like a bracelet, it would break and they would go everywhere. I had a ring, it would crack and it would smash. I've bought little little tumbles to put in like a
one of those little springy things.
I had it on all day, didn't even know, went to take it off at night and there was nothing in it. It was gone. And that one in particular, I had only been at home that day. So you would think that then I would find it somewhere in the house. This was years ago. Still to this day, I have never found it. It's just completely disappeared.
Wow.
And because I kept grabbing, you know, like I must be a little bit, I've got to just take these messages at the beginning rather than continually keep grabbing them all the time. But it was because everybody's saying like, you need to ground, and that's a really great grounding stone. Grab some hematite. I'm like, no, it doesn't work for me. So again, I guess that's with that energy, that it doesn't resonate with my energy or my frequency or what I'm needing at that time.
I like that. I mean, to me, that makes sense. It's logical because I often see people saying, oh, I broke this thing and da-da-da, what should I do? And the amount of times I see other people commenting, and like, aside from all the people trying to tell them it's an omen, this, that, the other, and whatever, like there's all that. But then there's also some people like, oh, just glue it back together. No,
there's a reason.
I believe there's a reason for it. Like, I know not everyone believes that, oh, but I spent a lot of money. Yeah, I know. But like gluing it back together, I agree.
I think there's a reason it broke, whether it's taken a hit for you or whether you don't need it anymore, like with your soda light. But then in other cases, I think sometimes that maybe you even need the two pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Like there is that time when there might be something that is needed that you actually need both of them. They have that different, maybe there's a small piece for somewhere else or whatever. So I think, I agree. Don't put it back together.
Don't glue it back together.
There's a reason for it, whether it's done its thing and it's moved on, or whether it now has a different purpose.
Yeah. And so I guess then to finish off, because I got one more crystal to
do. Yes, what's your last one? That,
we're going for time, really long. I think. Yeah. That's okay. I'll finish off with this one. I'll keep it brief. So the last one I'm actually wearing above the other one. So I don't know if you can see this one here. Yes. This necklace that I'm wearing. It's a nice deep reddish brown tone with some little cracked marks through it. So this one, I mean, this is actually a special necklace. It's got one of those copper wiry thing that they decorate with. Like it's supposed to help with the electromagnetic frequencies and the hertz and the... I don't know enough about it. I just trust that it does what they told me it does, and then that's it.
Yeah, I found, because I've even got a little piece of copper, that just a solid piece. I find it's a really good amplifier of everything. Yeah.
So that's got that around a piece of jasper. So jasper is actually very, very common in Australia in particular. Australian jasper is usually that very deep, ochery, reddish brown color.
Mm-hmm.
So the word jasper comes from, which means spotted or speckled stone. It's derived from Old French jaspre, a variant of Anglo-Norman jasper, or Latin jaspidem, which comes from the Greek word jaspis. Which is a feminine noun, and that comes from a Afro-Asiatic language like Hebrew, which is Yashbe, and Akkadian, which is Yashupu, or the Semitic etymology is believed to be unrelated to the English name, but that's just showing the language and how they're all connected to it to an extent. So with jasper itself, obviously it comes in so many different colors. I'm wearing red. So red jasper is really good for grounding. It's got that root chakra energy just to feel really settled and grounded in whatever you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's known as the supreme nurturer. It sustains the support and supports you during times of stress and brings tranquility and wholeness. Used in healing, it unifies all aspects of your life, and jasper reminds people to help each other. So it aligns the chakras and can be used in chakra layouts, and each color is appropriate to a specific chakra because there's just as many colors in jasper as there are in jade, if not more.
Yep.
It facilitates shamanic journeys and dream recall, provides protection and grounds energies in the body. It absorbs negative energy and cleanses and aligns the chakras and the aura, balances yin and yang, and aligns the physical, emotional, and mental bodies with the etheric realm. It clears electromagnetic and environmental pollution, including radiation, and aids dowsing. So using dowsing sticks.
Yeah, yeah, yep.
Psychologically, it imparts determination to all pursuits, brings the courage to get to grips with problems assertively, and encourages honesty with yourself. And supports during necessary conflict. Mentally, it aids quick thinking, promotes organizational abilities, and seeing projects through. It stimulates the imagination and transforms ideas into action. And physically, it prolongs sexual pleasure.
It supports
during prolonged illness or hospitalization and re-energizes the body. So it's great for circulation, digestive, and sexual organs. It balances the mineral content of the body, and it is particularly useful as a gem elixir because it does not overstimulate the body.
Ah, so it's got that, again, that sort of more calming, gentler sort of energy to it.
Yep. So basically the other thing, as they say, is that specific placements are shown depending on the type of color that it is. So yeah, because that would denote, like, the colors obviously align with the chakras. But for long, if you use it for long periods of time, jasper works because, let me say that again. It's better to use it over a long period of time because jasper's release is very slow. It's a slow acting stone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So if you're wanting to place large, like brown jasper in the rooms, it will absorb negativity and just ground the energy that's in the room.
Yeah.
So then you basically have like blue jasper, brown jasper, green jasper, purple jasper, red jasper, yellow jasper, bastnaesite, which is black jasper, mukite, which is Australian jasper, and then picture jasper, which is known as brown jasper. And then you have tiger iron, which is a combination between tigerzite, jasper, and hematite. Then you have orbicular jasper, which has got those little dots.
Lots
those
of dots.
Kind of snaky dots. Yep. Royal plume jasper and briciated jasper, which is veined with hematite. So there are so many types of jasper.
Yeah.
That's why I said like a jasper is like a good all-rounder. But look at the color, because the color is going to help you know which chakra it's relevant to and whatnot. But it's good for grounding. So that's why I like to wear this one, because it's good for grounding, because especially when you're doing a lot of spiritual work.
Yeah.
And I'm always about like psychic insight and spiritual connection and talking to spirit and talking to angels and all that stuff, in this head space and up in this third eye space and throat space.
Keep bring it down a little.
This is just to bring it down a little. Yeah. To keep myself grounded. Connected. Yeah. Because being a water sign, I find it very easy to connect with source and spirit.
Yeah.
But I find
it harder to keep grounded.
Jasper really helps me connect with my Capricorn rising energy as well. I find. I don't know if it's necessarily Capricorn stone, because I think red garnet is, but I find that anything that's like that earthiness.
Yeah.
That ochre, earthy, brown, green, those types of colors, I tend to wear a lot of earthy tones during the day. Yeah. Like I love my reds, my browns, my greens, I like all those earthy, like elemental colors.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that's like a good way to kind of connect with my Capricorn rising side, as opposed to just being all emotion all the time.
Helps to tone it down a little bit.
Yeah, so just to help me feel a little bit more grounded and not so off with the fairies, so to speak.
Mm.
Fairies, fae, elves, whoever.
Whoever.
Any of
wherever
them, all
you're
of
at.
Them.
Whoever we're at. So usually see it more the brown and the red, isn't it? That's the more common.
More common ones. And so it's just, it's as we said before, like it's just a very good grounding stone. So I'll often, if I've been doing a lot of meditation circles, or if I've been teaching tarot, or if I've been doing a lot of channeling with the divine in any way, shape or form, I will put this necklace on straight after to bring me down. But it's not that... It's like that kind of just bringing you down, helping
just
balance
the,
everything.
The slow, what is it when you're coming into the airport, like that slow descent?
Slow descent, yeah, the slow descent. So it's I don't wear it when I am trying to connect with the divine, though.
Yeah,
it's just a thing I avoid if I'm channeling. I will avoid any kind of grounding stone, because of the fact that I find that I just think it stops me from connecting
pulling
as easily.
It. Yeah, I was gonna say
it's like you're pulling in two different directions. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then I'll put it on specifically to bring myself back down to earth and feel my feet firmly planted on the ground. I mean, I'll also do things like drink water or eat food or something that physically grounds you, but I'll wear.
But that's one of your go-to things for grounding.
Yes, sir.
That's so beautiful. Wow.
That's crystals part two.
Yeah, part
two. Hopefully, guys and girls, I need to stop with this gender exclusive terminology. Hopefully you witches enjoyed today's episode.
Yes.
If there's any crystals that you would like us to cover in a future episode, please let us know. Because I think to date, let me just quickly open up my book again. Hang on. To date, we've done, obviously today's episode was jade, lapis, jasper. And then on your side, you had selenite, sodalite, and smoky quartz.
Yep. And then last time.
You've gone the S's this time.
Yeah, I did. They're all S's. All S's.
I didn't realize we're following a theme.
Realize either. And they're all kind of to do with the mind, clearing, grounding.
Although I did jade, jasper, but then lapis.
Oh, then you got lapis. Jade. It's not quite there.
But last time we had clear quartz, black tourmaline, amethyst, green opal, and amber. And then I did black obsidian, rose quartz, fluorite, celestite, and prenite. So they're the ones we've done.
That's
so
what we've
far.
Done so far. There is lots.
So many.
Oh,
I just had a brain fart moment. I forgot to show you all. I mentioned this in a previous episode.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that was.
So my witch's ball, you can, if I hold it up to camera, you can see there's actually a piece of nephrite jade in there amongst all of the black obsidian chips and the herbs that you can see in the bottom.
Yeah.
But I just realized I'm covering their thing. But you can see my nephrite jade that's hovering around inside my witch's ball. So I'm going to be hanging these.
So you
up.
use that as a part of your witch's ball.
Yeah, because I wanted it to bring in the prosperity and the luck and also the healing energy and that heart chakra space and whatnot. So here's
that
my finished product,
energy.
Everybody.
Yay! It's beautiful.
Not that you can really see it because of my ring light is reflecting off it, but that's okay.
That's okay. Still got it all there.
So I just wanted to show y'all exactly what they look like because I completely forgot to show with the nephrite jade that's in
it. That's what we were doing.
Awesome.
All
so
right.
Let us know what you think. Hit us up in the comments.
Do.
Send us a message. Do whatever. And don't forget, if you would like to get access to these episodes before everybody else.
Yes, get exclusive early access.
Then feel free to sign up to our Patreon. So you can go to our Instagram to follow the link tree and it will take you there, the very top one. Yep. And on that note, I wanted to shout out to Nicole and Thea.
They're
our very first and second Patreons or patrons, whatever, however we refer to them, patrons.
I don't know.
Yeah, so thank you so much for your support.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yes, we put it out there, thought, oh, let's just see
what
happens here. Because as you all know, that this is a podcast that we do out of the goodness of our heart, just because we want to share this knowledge with everybody and inspire you all. We've been getting inundated with messages like left, right, and center on YouTube, on Facebook, on Instagram. It's been great.
Private message, things like that.
Yeah. So we want to keep bringing this to you. So with your financial support through Patreon, that's just going to help us to be able to go to like witchy conventions and conferences and just to help improve everything
and all of those
bring you even better content.
That's it, to bring bigger and better. So thank you.
Thank you. So shout out again to Thea and Nicole.
Yay!
Other than that, I hope you guys have an amazing, guys and girls, everybody, have an amazing rest of your day.
Have an awesome day. See ya. Bye.